From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we, we're moving real close to February now. So appreciate you all being with us. Well, you're going, well, when's Ash Wednesday? It doesn't start till March. Easter is April the 21st. Well, we go north, not north to Alaska, but north, and we're joined by Richard Trevaney, who is the Regional Youth and Young Adult Coordinator for the Diocese of Sacramento in the North State. Richard, good day.
Hey, Bob. How are you, brother?
Doing very, very well. Good to hear your voice, as always. Glad that the phones are still working.
It's keeping some of our areas got a few feet of snow, but we're holding our ground. So.
Good. Yeah.
A little muddy, but we're good.
The North State, you get the white stuff called snow. We get the white stuff called fog, and down here in the valley.
Yeah, right. It's amazing how when you drive out of your element, you sort of freak out, right?
Oh.
So if I was down in Sacramento and I hit fog, I'd be like 2 miles an hour down the road, and Sacramento people are like, fog, I can drive 60. No problem.
Yeah. I know they're the ones. They're the ones that scare me.
They get in the snow, like, whoa, easy. What is this stuff? And I'm like, piece of cake.
Yeah, I'm white knuckle when I'm driving in snow.
I took my family this Christmas to visit my brother in Texas. So.
Oh, you're smart.
I piled the whole family, all six of us, into our van, and we drove 29 hours to Texas, just outside of San Antonio, and it was amazing. You know, we had all kinds of, trials and tribulations on the road, but it was good. We survived, and that's part of the journey.
Well, the interesting thing is you think of San Antonio, is warm. There are places in Texas where they get a substantial amount of snow. Ask the people in Amarillo.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, it's kind of hard to get to Texas without driving through some snow country.
Oh, yeah. And actually, we hit while we were going through just through Tucson and Arizona, we hit a snowstorm coming back.
Wow.
And luckily, it was during the day because they already had, like, warning signs for the evening. There was going to be, like, a freeze for the evening. So, so we sort of skated by on the way back. So it was good.
Well, good. You've got, as we've moved into the new year and almost into February now, you got a full plate.
Yeah, we've got quite a bit of stuff happening starting in February. So we're still continuing our Cultivate youth ministry training series.
Tell us about Cultivate. What is Cultivate about?
As our department, we've seen and been listening to youth ministers, reach out to us and say, look, we really feel like we need some specific, like, training and support in certain areas. And so we've sort of reached out to some professionals in the area within our department, within the diocese, and some talent outside of that to bring that training to youth ministry and young adult ministry. So. February, we have our own BJ Visitation is going to be doing a whole training series on marketing and social media for youth ministry. Obviously, that's what he does. That's his career. That's what he does for our department, for the whole diocesan pastoral center.
He is such a whiz with everything social media, technical. Occasionally, I look at him and I say, "Will you please speak English? I'm older than you are." because there are things it reminds me of the time I took auto shop in high school and knew nothing about a car. And the instructor just kind of assumed I knew what a spark plug was, and
taking an auto shop class today as opposed to like when we took it. Like,
oh yes,
it's nothing different. At least like spark plug and pointers and distributor caps, like that's the language I at least sort of get my head around.
Yeah.
Now you got the computer science degree to work on a car.
Yeah. When I had an auto shop, they were still had a horse in there and a buggy.
Oh, you jet.
Well, that's going to be a great session with
yeah,
BJ.
Yeah, that's going to be really good. And that'll be in Sacramento. That's February 12th. So mark your calendars on that.
And what age are we talking about?
That's youth minister. So anybody that's doing youth ministry.
Yeah.
So, you know, that could be, and I would even open that up to like a core team. So not just the youth minister, but a core team of people that do youth ministry. Anybody that's working on that side of the ministry, that's advertising and creating flyers and, you know, and trying to push stuff into the social media market, they're the people we want to get there. So, and he's great because, you know, he's done stuff for our department specifically. It's just amazing. It's not just like, oh, here's how you post an Instagram.
Right.
He brings in a Catholic identity to that of
Absolutely.
Like, not just like how to do it, but here's some logic behind it. Like, here's why we're doing it. Here's how it connects us to being a Catholic family, right? Like, here's how this is the reason we're doing this, right? So it's not just like, oh, well, we have to do this evil thing called social media, you know, because that's the world, and then, you know, we're doing ministry when we get to people. No, he's like, look, all of these are connected, right? It's a bigger picture. It's part of the story, and he threads the Catholic story within that, right? Which is so great. I mean, that's why he really is a great blessing to be in our department.
Yeah, I remember when I first met him and we were going through something and I thought, where do they find these people? You know, this is what a treasure.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we got to keep them too. That's our biggest, yeah.
Yeah, I remember we wanted some posters made and they were going to about, you know, there were some changes to the Bishop's Hour in terms of timing and where you could, you know, access us and et cetera, all the online abilities to access the Bishop's Hour. And he came up with the idea that we'll get these posters and we'll put them in the, you know, in the back of the churches and stuff. And it was like, I think that afternoon, he had a mock-up of a poster. You know, I was waiting.
Yeah.
We'll meet again next month or something. And then it's like the next day, the posters were already there. They were,
and not just like a poster.
Oh yeah,
very high quality,
exactly.
Well designed. Like he really does. Like I'm a fine arts major. You know, apart from my seminary formation, and he really does have like just an amazing eye.
Yeah.
For visual stuff. And he's, you know, very creative. Like that, it's funny to find all of that talent within one person.
Yeah,
you know,
it really
I'm
is.
Glad he's not with me because, you know, his ego would probably get really big right now. But he really is just really talented. He gets the Catholic identity stuff. He understands, you know, the church. He understands social media. He understands like design and posters and how to create stuff. You know, making up a logo. He understands branding, right? But that's a necessary element to what we're doing. So, yeah, he does some amazing stuff. I mean, if you look, I'm looking at our Fired Up poster for our 10th annual confirmation conference.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's amazing. You know, it's just a good design, you know? So, and it appeals to, you know, that generation, right? Our young people. So, which is cool.
So speaking of Fired Up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's our big, you know, our diocesan event for you know, our confirmation students. So we have four events, four opportunities, and you know, now that I'm in the department and really been, you know, 2 years now solid in the North State, we've decided to bring to not just have, you know, 4 days down in Sacramento, but to bring a day into the North State. So our first conference is going to be here in Red Bluff, February 9th. We've actually rented out the State Theater, which is right next to our Sacred Heart Church.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll be using both facilities to house. So far, we've got over 500 people registered for that conference. which is great. And, you know, we're still looking to bring in more people. We've got some amazing, you know, talent, people that are coming up to, you know, present and get people excited about, you know, faith, you know. And then February 10th, we're going to be in St. Patrick's, St. Vincent in Vallejo.
Mm-hmm.
And then the following weekend will be February 23rd and February 24th at Jesuit High School.
Here in Sacramento, in Carmichael. Yeah.
Yeah, they're in Sacramento. So, you know, we're spreading our, you know, our resources and our team, and we're just going to be traveling with our team instead of our team staying in one spot and just having everybody come to one place. So,
very good. Very good.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting, man. We've got some great people. Joe Melendez is coming up. And Paul J. Kim is coming up to do our February 9th and 10th days, So and some other, you know, some other talent. So you got to show up to find out. So it'll be good.
I love downtown Red Bluff.
Me
I do. You feel a little bit like you're going back in time a little bit.
Yeah, and the church is beautiful. It's the oldest. It's the oldest Victorian church north of Sacramento. So,
wow.
You know, if you go to the cathedral, right, and that Victorian style of, you know, architecture and the Art Nouveau, you know, the art.
It really reminds me of almost like a mini cathedral. You know, the steps
really
going up to it, and it's right there on the main drag.
Yeah, right on Main Street. Yeah, yeah. Right on the corner, right in the heart of Red Bluff. You know.
Yeah.
Literally. So, yeah, it's amazing. So, that's our big stuff for February. That's what we're gearing up for. And I'm working on stuff for our Youth on a Mission summer program. So, you know, that's for high school kids, you know,
now, what is that?
So Youth on a Mission is, that's a program that we developed, from On Fire. With the nine different dioceses that we work with to put on Fire, we've been meeting. We bring in, you know, people, youth from all over nine dioceses for this, you know, for that big event. And so we said, look, we have all these talent, you know, we have all of these directors and talents from all these dioceses. Why don't we hold and put on a leadership training for our youth and just pool all of our talent together and we'll host it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so this will be, I think it's a 6-year inception in doing this. This will be my third year in the process of it. So it's great. So last year we were at St. Mary's in Moraga, and we're looking to be back in that same area. So, it's beautiful. It's an amazing, amazing time with these young men and women. So praying with them. Giving them skills, doing workshops with them, you know, really walking with them as disciples, right? Sort of like really modeling after, you know, the Emmaus, right? And Jesus, right? With the 12 disciples. You're just hanging out with these kids, eating lunch, eating dinner, you're learning, you're breaking stuff open, you're praying with them. It's amazing.
And you stay right in the dorms there at St. Mary's?
Yeah, so we'll stay right in the dorms, the beautiful chapel. We'll do adoration. We'll do morning prayer. We have mass every day. It's great.
That's such a beautiful campus, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, man. Just, you know, those hills and the university. It's a gold nugget in the North State to me. So, we've got a lot of great people. Ryan Ramirez was there last year as sort of our EMC, and he'll be up again hanging out with us. And he's been doing a ton of work with youth in our diocese and around our diocese, you know, all these different areas. So that guy's on fire, man. It's so good to see him, you know, and his story and sharing his story. And it's good.
Great stuff. How can people learn more, Richard?
There's a website for that. I'm trying to think of it off the top of my head. But if you go to, if you look up On Fire, there'll be a link to it from that website. But the Confirmation Conference is literally that. So it's www.confirmationconference.com. You can always go to our great new website, the Diocese of Sacramento, and go into the youth and young adult ministry, and there's links in there for all of the events, for all of those. So.
Good. And again, February 9 at Sacred Heart in Red Bluff, February 10, February 9 is a Saturday, February 10th is Sunday, St. Patrick, St. Vincent in Vallejo, Saturday the 23rd and Sunday the 24th of February, both at a Jesuit High School here in Carmichael.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, and then in, you know, just to drop some seeds, in March we're doing confirmation retreats in Trinity Pines, but we can talk more about that later. But yeah. So there's enough on our plate now.
Very good. Hey, Richard, always a pleasure. Thanks for all you do.
Awesome, Bob. God bless you, brother. Thanks for reaching out to us.
God bless you too, Richard. Greatly appreciate it. Yeah, we're all brothers in Christ. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this.
Hello, this is Mark Ross from the Diocese of Sacramento Black Catholic Ministry. This is the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thanks for that. Thanks for all you do, Mark, here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Great stuff. And we always love having Mark on the program as well. Well, we're pleased and honored to welcome in Judy Dietlein, the president of the Sacramento Diocesan Council for St. Vincent de Paul Society. Judy, good day to you.
Well, good morning, Bob.
Good to have you with us, even by phone.
Yes. it's a distance from Benicia, that's for sure.
Well, yes, and it's wonderful that radio you can do with phone interviews, or you'd have trouble doing it because people in this diocese, and especially in the St. Vincent de Paul Society, you're always so busy.
Busy, and the distances are far and wide.
Oh,
we
boy,
go from the
they?
Oregon border and weed all the way down here to the southern part, which is in Benicia.
Wow. So you have been in this role for how long now?
A year and a half.
Wow. Do you still feel like you're the new president?
No, it's aged me even more than I am. No, I think I've grown somewhat into the role, but there's so many new things that continually come up that I'm always learning. And this year, especially with disaster, that was the big one.
Yeah. Judy, before we go on, explain for those who might not know or have sort of an idea, but they're not sure, exactly what the mission and the role of the St. Vincent de Paul Society is.
Well, our mission, actually, people may not realize, is for our members, which we call Vincentians, are to grow in holiness and increase their faith. And with that, we are able to go out into the communities and serve the poor. And we show them our faith as well as we see the face of Christ in the poor that we serve. Mm-hmm. And we serve everybody and anybody. No source of charity for the society is foreign to us. We'll take on whatever is needed. Over the years, communities change and the needs change. Sometimes it was food, and sometimes, like now, homelessness and rental assistance is critical. So we go with whatever is out there that is needed, and our Vincentians go in pairs and meet people face to face. We go into their homes and find out more about them and how we can help them.
I think it's so important that you meet people where they are.
Yes. You know, too often the poor are at the mercy of making appointments and sitting in offices and waiting on lines. And many of them, if they are working, don't have the time to take off or get a babysitter or have the transportation.
Exactly.
So going to where it's most convenient to them at their homes is very important to us, and we call it a home visit.
And why pairs?
Well, that's the way it was set up with Frederick Ozanon when he learned about serving the poor. You always went in pairs. For us, it's important sometimes for it to be male and female only because we hear things differently.
Mm-hmm.
What the attention to detail for one is different from another. And some people feel more comfortable with men, and some people feel more comfortable with women. And so, and there are other reasons, safety reasons,
sure.
And protection of our Vincentians, because we go into areas that are often not safe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a variety of reasons, but the most important thing is that we follow our rule and how we began in going in pairs.
And I think true, it's probably comforting for both of the people in the pair to have somebody there to help it along.
Yes. They bounce things off each other after they meet with someone. And it's amazing how one person hears one thing and another person hears another
mm-hmm.
thing. You know, and sometimes things are going on in the home. There are children around, and
sure.
so attention spans are different, and so you tend to, one person might lose something while listening to a child and not hear what the person who's requesting some help is saying. So we find that it works very well, and in this day and age when everything is electronic, when I'm calling you, you know, we're talking over a phone and people are emailing and texting, it's still so important to have that face-to-face meeting and let people know, because sometimes, quite honestly, Bob, we can't help people in the way that they need,
mm-hmm.
but just by being there and showing them that we care, it means something to them.
Oh, absolutely.
It's important. We don't lose that personal touch that we have with people.
So, Judy, can you give us a family, a couple, an individual, somebody? First, how do they contact you, and what do you do with it? And then, what might likely result from people going out and meeting with them?
Well, we have now 55 conferences in the diocese,
mm-hmm.
and a conference is the group of members.
Set up on a parish level?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
yes. They all work out of a parish at with the pastor's agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the pastor's agreement. We set up a St. Vincent de Paul. Some people have offices in the parish. Some people have food lockers, and they all have some kind of a phone number that is well published. And it's amazing in communities how people know to call St. Vincent de Paul. But sometimes they call the church, and the church will refer them to St. Vincent de Paul. Someone will get a message, and a home visit team will call this person to find out specifically what they need. If they're having trouble with their rent, or they cannot, they're worried, maybe they have a 48-hour shutoff on their utilities,
mm-hmm.
Someone will set up an appointment, go to their home, find out what's going on, and from there, the home visit team talks with whatever financial team there is within the conference,
mm-hmm.
and they decide if they should be helping this person, and if so, how much.
Mm-hmm.
Very often, we are not able, our conferences don't have the resources to, let's say someone has a utility bill of $600 or $700.
Right.
And we might be able to help with half of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We never give funds directly to people. We pay directly to the utilities,
uh-huh.
or we pay to the landlord. Often when we go to visit their homes, we find out that there are other needs.
Mm-hmm.
It has not been unusual to find that people are sleeping on the floor on mattresses or on sleeping bags. They have no dining room furniture, you know, a kitchen table. to eat at. And this is what's discovered when you go to someone's home. If you meet in an office, you have no idea of the other things
sure.
that are going on.
Absolutely.
And so those things can also be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And our conferences work with our thrift store in Sacramento on Watt Avenue.
Right.
And they provide vouchers to people so they can get furniture.
Mm-hmm.
We have a mattress program so we can provide beds for people who need beds. And the conferences work with the thrift store to get this assistance. So, and once this particular, let's say they help them with a PG&E bill,
mm-hmm.
and they find out that, you know, maybe they are just, they had some problems because they didn't have a job, but now they've had a job offer and they're going back to work. It's not unusual, and it's recommended that our conferences follow up with these people to see how they're doing, if they got the job, if
mm-hmm.
they need any more help. You know, sometimes just giving them groceries for a week or a few days helps them to pay some other bill or buy gas for their
sure.
car.
Sure.
So it should be ongoing for a while. It's what we call the systemic change of not just helping urgent situations, but helping people on a long term. There was a conference that got a call from a gentleman who he was in a Section 8 housing,
mm-hmm.
and he turned out that he had somewhat, I don't want to call it a hoarding problem, but the apartment was in disarray, and he was in jeopardy of losing this apartment if it wasn't cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
And this conference worked with this gentleman for weeks. They brought in a professional person who, I don't know what you call them, declutters.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah. I've seen their ads.
They got the place cleaned up. They helped him see what he needed and what he didn't need. And he got to keep the place, and the landlord was pleased to renew his lease. But this went on for, I would say, a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so happy that he, in turn, gives back to the community by working with St. Vincent de Paul and mm-hmm. others to help them with whatever they need. So it kind of it goes full circle, too, with a lot of people. When they see someone coming in and helping them to that degree, that they want to give it back in another way.
Indeed. Judy, you mentioned the thrift store, and of course, it's a beautiful thrift store, and all of us are able to shop there.
Yes. Thank you for mentioning that. I can't tell you how nice, I mean, when people think of thrift stores, sometimes there's not a feeling of going into a Target or something,
right.
but this thrift store is so well merchandised, is so clean. The items that are hanging on the racks, when I go in there, I want to shop.
Oh, yeah,
if
no.
I'm going in there for a meeting or to talk to someone, my eyes get caught by things and I want to stop and look. And the clothes are, they steam them, they hang them, they merchandise things. So you just want to go in there and fill up a bag and bring it home with you. But we also love you to bring your donations as well.
Sure, sure. And you take an awful lot of stuff, and it's open 7 days a week. What sort of things do you have special needs for, and what sort of things do you just don't take?
Well, there are certain electronic items that we don't take if they're... or appliances like refrigerators, washers. If they're older than 5 years, we would not take that.
Mm-hmm.
Most baby items like car seats and cribs and things that have safety attached to it, we're not able to take that as
right.
well.
Yeah, the laws have changed so much on those,
yes,
those
yes.
things.
We, over, you know, there's
yeah.
no way that we could feel comfortable and safely give this to someone
right.
Not knowing if it had been recalled or
right.
whatever. But other than that, housewares, furniture. We love furniture because furniture is always needed. Clothing, shoes, purses, jewelry. We have lots of great stuff. If after a holiday like Christmas you want to, you find that you want to give things away, we love to be able to put things out for holidays like Valentine's Day. I'm sure the store has a whole Valentine's display, so you can go in and pick up your Valentine gifts there.
Wow. Yeah, and it's a, my kids love to go there. We can't get near Watt Avenue without them saying, "Dad, we're pretty close."
I love to hear that. Yeah, and such unusual things too, and games and toys and sporting goods, they're all there.
I remember one of my daughters was playing freshman high school basketball in the Sacramento area, and I had promised to take her to the thrift store. So she was a ninth grader, and this was last year. And we came into the store on a Saturday after her game, and she saw one of those old phones. I think of the kind we used to hang on the wall, not the old rotary phone, but the, I think we called them princess phones or something.
Oh,
and
yes.
The kind you'd hang on the wall in the kitchen. And they were very cool and modern and sleek. And she saw it and she said, "Wow, do you think this thing works?" And I said, I don't think so. You know, it's not a cell phone. And I picked it up and looked on the bottom. And here was all the cord wrapped up with the little thing you click into the wall. And I said, "Well, I don't know." And it was a couple of bucks. And so I said, "Well, let's just get it. It'll look nice in your bedroom anyway." And we got home. She figured it out, plugged it in.
And it worked, right?
She's got a phone in her room now.
Isn't that fun? Those are the great stories that I love to hear, people going in and finding fun stuff like that. Because you always think, well, you know, it's low-cost good for people who can't afford other, which is true. That's part of the mission of being able to provide items for people, clothing, shoes, whatever, who can't afford it going somewhere else. But there's so many fun things in there for people who just might enjoy somebody else's, you know, giveaway, and it becomes a treasure to them.
The treasure was the word that was coming to my mind. And she can't wait to have her girlfriends in. It's, look what I've got in my room, you know.
I like it.
Yeah, it's great. You also mentioned, Judy, and we're talking with Judy Dietlein, the president of the Sacramento Diocesan Council of St. Vincent de Paul, so responsible for the entire 20 counties of the Diocese of Sacramento, St. Vincent de Paul. You mentioned the tragedies we've had, glaring, the car fire in Redding, and then the just unbelievable campfire in Paradise and that area. How does St. Vincent de Paul fit into that?
Oh, well, we have been there on the forefront, both fires, but the campfire in Paradise, all of Paradise was evacuated.
Mm-hmm.
We did have a
literally
conference.
All,
yeah, everybody. Yeah. And we had a conference there at St. Thomas More.
Mm-hmm.
And the church did survive, but the rectory and the parish hall did burn down.
Mm-hmm.
The pastor there, Father Godwin, ended up at St. John the Evangelist in Chico.
Mm-hmm.
And when this all happened, our Chico conference at our Divine Savior stepped up and took a leadership position to organize what we call, we organize with whatever was going on there and being present at the Disaster Recovery Center,
mm-hmm.
which was put up in the Chico Mall in an old Sears building that mm-hmm. had closed down. And there are organizations in many counties. They're called VOADs, and they're put together by volunteer organizations that, when disaster hits, they all come together and they get the help that's needed. Well, in Butte County, there was no VOAD. So mm-hmm. while the disaster was going on, they were trying to organize themselves so they could help people. Because it was so large and so critical, FEMA came in almost immediately. And so they set up in this Sears building with maybe 100 different organizations.
Mm-hmm.
St. Vincent de Paul was there from day one when the Disaster Recovery Center opened, and they stayed there for, I believe it was 55 days.
Wow.
It's getting ready to close this week,
mm-hmm.
but they were there almost the entire time, and they sat down with people who came to them. They interviewed them, and they gave them... The interviews were necessary to find out what these people needed,
mm-hmm.
and what people had in unmet needs. Some people had insurance because they had homes,
sure.
and they were able to at least rent a place or find some place to live or know that their home had value and they could either rebuild it or move somewhere.
Right.
But those people who were renters who had no insurance, they were right. in dire need. The other thing to realize is because there was nothing left in Paradise, there were no businesses, people also lost their jobs.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The hospital burned down.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to a woman when I was there who... she was in the administration office of the hospital, and because I asked her, I said, well, are they doing anything for you? Are they helping you get another job? And she said, only the doctors and the nurses were being relocated mm-hmm. to other facilities, but if you were in an office position, you were out of luck.
Mm-hmm.
So she was struggling. She had young kids. She was a single mom. And yet, where I met her at the Disaster Recovery Center. She was volunteering at an organization that was providing food for people every day.
Wow.
The St. Vincent de Paul in Chico only has 12 members. But they were able to recruit people from the parish in Our Divine Savior and St. John. And the community to be able to talk to people for 55 days, and they talked to more than 4,600 of them.
Wow.
We have the Disaster Relief Services Corporation, which is part of our national St. Vincent de Paul. They have provided resources and help. They sent volunteers to help organize the St. Vincent de Paul at this what we call the DRC, and we also got a grant for Walmart gift cards, which we gave out mm-hmm. to people, and hygiene kits, which were greatly needed for, you know, we had the hygiene kits were specific to men, women, and children, and so that went on every day for 55 days, and the president there had been out of town when the fire hit. And so the treasurer of this conference, Brent Roden, took charge and he got things organized. And this gentleman has going on now to help with the long-term recovery because this is going to go on for years.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's involved in getting the long-time recovery case management needs set up. St. Vincent de Paul has something called House in a Box, and House in a Box is for down the road when people eventually find a place to live, whether it's to rent or they're going to rebuild or they're going to be in a mobile home. This is furniture to put in your home, housewares, linens, and they call it House in a Box. And it requires a warehouse
mm-hmm.
and people to employ and lots of money to get it all started. So that's something that we'll be working on for the future. And getting case managers, probably working with Catholic Charities,
mm-hmm.
who is stepping up in the case management area. It's complicated. It's going to go on for a long time. But I do have some wonderful news. I was on a conference call yesterday with the president of the St. Thomas More Conference. He mm-hmm. has resurfaced. He initially was sent, he went to, I think, Sacramento when mm-hmm. he evacuated. Then he went, he was in Chico for a while. I think he's landed in Yuba City now.
Mm-hmm.
He and his family are moving out of state. They made that decision. But before he moves, he had found another president. They are going to reestablish this conference. And they are, they're getting, they're finding the members. They're getting it all together, and they will I'll probably be helping each other first and then helping the rest of the community. So that's going to get started as soon as possible.
Wow.
The funds are there. Bob, I can't tell you how generous people have been. We had funds coming in from all over, well, certainly California, the Bay Area, sometimes out of state. And so those funds will help this conference get reestablished and help the community of Paradise get back on the map. There's a lot of work to be done there.
Have you been able to get a sense yet? Are people planning, for the most part, to come back?
You know, I've heard it both ways. Some people are just ready to leave the area.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a number of a big part of the community in Paradise was seniors and retired
right,
people.
Right.
When you look at rebuilding, it takes a long time to rebuild a home if you had a home there.
Right.
And my feeling is many of retired people might be not looking to stay there,
mm-hmm.
but just move on with their lives and buy a house somewhere else. But the younger people, the people who are just getting settled there, they're going to stay. They're going to tough it out. Maybe they've found some temporary housing in, all over, but Chico and Redding and mm-hmm. Sacramento, and are looking forward to getting back to their lives there. I mean, when you think about living in a place for many, many years, sometimes
sure.
you just don't want to leave.
Sure.
And,
I mean, the reasons you had to live there are still there.
Yeah, and people are, have a sense of community.
Right.
And it's hard to say definitely what people want to do, but I think there's going to be a variety of reasons for staying and a variety of reasons for going. And we'll just have to see how that works out. The problem being that there's no infrastructure now is keeping people away. They have to put in roads and sewer systems and
they have to
just
haul away all the debris.
Yes.
I was reading about they don't even know which landfills are able to handle and the amount of traffic on the road from the trucks. Hopefully some people affected are going to be able to be employed in the cleanup.
Now, that's a very good point, and hopefully that is true, but it might be specialized. There's hazardous waste
yeah,
there.
Yeah, there's a lot of that for sure.
And so there are certain organizations and agencies that take care of that. But, I can see down the road a lot of construction and a lot of jobs there and people resettling and getting back to their lives. There was someone actually a woman from Benicia ended up, a woman from Paradise ended up here in Benicia.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only place she could find, and she told me, I was able to get in touch with her through one of our members who's a Red Cross nurse who happened to be, she goes to all the disasters, and she was working in Chico, and came across this woman's brothers. And so she mentioned, you should talk to Judy Dietline. She's in Benicia. So we connected, and the day she went back to her home, you know, they weren't allowed back for many weeks.
Right.
But when she did go back, and there was nothing there. Mm-hmm. I mean, she had hopes of finding something,
sure,
a piece of her life there, and she found nothing. But her neighbor across the street was a young family. They had just purchased their first house. They had only been there for months, and all gone. Mm-hmm. And they were there the same day that she was there. And she said it was just heartbreaking. But those young people with a young family, I can see them rebuilding,
mm-hmm,
you know, and going back to them. They went there for a reason, and I'm sure that they want to. And this lady, too, she wanted to go back to Paradise. That was where her life was, and she had lived in many other places, and she truly loved her life there and wanted to see her and her family back in somewhere in Paradise again.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those towns. It's a cliche, but it was a charming, beautiful town, very close knit. You're right. A lot of retired folks, a lot of blue collar people who commuted to jobs in Chico or you know, Oroville, or places like that. But a town with a lot of pride.
Yes, and I think disasters like this certainly bring people together.
Yeah,
you know, and so we're happy that we can be a part of this and help with whatever disaster relief we can. It's certainly been a learning experience for all of us. The Redding fire, the car fire there, that conference is still working with people who were affected. In Redding, it was different because half of the town burned down and the other half didn't. So
right,
there was at
right,
least something there that people could cling on to initially. Whereas there was, everybody was gone from Paradise for a long, long time.
Yeah, with Redding, it was mostly on the west side of town, and up near where Highway 299 goes out of Redding and heads over to the coast. But in those areas, it was the same devastation as Paradise.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We didn't, actually, when I didn't see that, we were mostly at this, you know, when we go up there to help, go to the disaster recovery center. So, and it's when fires the disaster hits, no one's allowed there anyway.
Right.
So you just really only get to see what people get to see on the news or on the internet, those pictures, but you don't really get to see it firsthand. But you hear it from people, and you hear it in their voices or their see it in their faces how devastating it is. And in Paradise, they did lose 86 lives. 86
right,
people died.
Right.
So it's been a long journey, and it's going to go on for a long time. But we are so blessed with the people in Chico who have helped so much and so many people and will continue to help for so long. And I can't tell you how happy I was to hear that the conference in St. Thomas More will be starting up again. That was the best news we could get this week.
Boy, that's wonderful. It's wonderful. So, obviously, I mean, this is almost unprecedented in American history, a whole city to have that, you know, almost complete devastation. There were a few houses that were spared, and like you say, the church was spared. But it's just, it's hard to get your hands around. And yet, it comes on the heels of just about a year later from Santa Rosa, which is not in the diocese. But do you get calls from your compatriots in the Diocese of Santa Rosa when something like that happens?
Well, I have been in contact with them from time to time. I haven't heard from them with this last disaster because when the Redding car fire happened, they were inundated with another fire up in Mendocino that
right.
they were dealing with. And, I mean, they just had their hands full. They just kept mm-hmm. going and going and going. It seems like it never stopped in that area. But we've seen each other at meetings, national meetings, and if they needed anything, they would call us. I the last contact we had with them, this was a great story. In Santa Rosa, when people were able to get back onto their properties, there were some donated mobile homes
mm-hmm.
or RVs that they could live in for while their houses were being rebuilt. Some were donated, some were purchased. Well, we helped get a donated trailer over to Santa Rosa when people were beginning to get back on their properties after the Tubbs fire. When the Redding fire happened, there was a family, I think two families, who wanted to not sell the vehicle that they were living in, this trailer. They wanted to donate it to the
wow.
car fire, and they did.
Wow.
And so it was like, pay it forward.
Yeah.
They used it. They were done with it. Their houses were rebuilt. And with the Santa Rosa and the Sonoma Council of St. Vincent de Paul, they worked together with the St. Joseph's in Redding,
mm-hmm.
that conference, and they got people into these donated trailers. And it was a wonderful story to know that, you know, after they had suffered so much and they lived in these until their houses were rebuilt in Santa Rosa, their first thought was, let's give it to someone in Redding so they can use it while their houses are being rebuilt.
That's a very touching story. You know, I remember the weed fire a few years ago, which it seemed so it was devastating to those affected. And little did we dream that we would have three more fires of a much greater magnitude.
Yes, but you know, and the church did burn
down. Absolutely, yeah. Holy
and
family.
it has been rebuilt,
right?
And so that was quite an amazing story that happened so quickly that they were able to reopen that church. I think within a year.
Yeah, it was a real group effort, and what a beautiful new church it is.
It is. I've seen pictures of it. I haven't been there. I'd love to go up there.
Weed's another one of those charming places.
Yes, and that is where the district president of North State is, and he is his conference was in Paradise. That
oh,
was
wow.
one of his conferences.
And he's now in Weed. Judy, when you go to Weed, you have to go to the Hi-Low Cafe.
Because why?
Because it's just the best food in the North State.
Okay. I'll remember that. And I would like to get there. I would.
Yeah, it's been in the same family since the 40s, I think. So
wow.
It's right on the main drag in Weed, and it's sort of one of those must stops for our family when we go through that area. So, Judy, you have, speaking of funding and needs, you have a big event coming up in April, your big annual Dinner for the Poor.
Yes, it's on Friday, April 26th. It's at the Doubletree at Arden in Sacramento, mm-hmm. Which we've had it there for several years
right.
now. And it's a Friday night, and it's our biggest and fundraiser that we have during the year.
Right.
We have between 500 and 600 attendees.
Always
guests.
Sold out.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I kind of teased everybody because we finally got a keynote speaker,
mm-hmm.
and we haven't told anybody yet who it is, but we might be able to tell you, Bob.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I'm honored. Are we going to play 20 questions so I have to guess?
No. It is someone. It's interesting how I had not, when I heard the name and someone said, well, we should look into this. I said, I don't know who that is, do I? And they said, oh, well, look him up. You know, look him up on the internet. And I did. And then I realized who it was. It was someone that I had seen on TV about a decade ago on Throwdown with Bobby Flay. And this priest beat Bobby Flay.
Oh, no.
And his name is, and, you know, talk about difficult names. His name is Father Leo Padalinghug.
I know that name. Yeah.
He is just so energetic, so personable, so much fun to listen to. He's the founder of something called Plating Grace. And it's an organization whose mission is to strengthen families and communities around the dinner table. So he is, I don't know if you call him a chef or a cook, but he has his own cooking show on the internet, and he wants to bring people together with food. I mean, that's his mission. His TV show is called Savoring Our Faith.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, so he's a fun person to listen to, but I think he can easily connect, what we do with feeding the poor and using food to bring people together. That's what he does as well with families. And he's written books, and he's been on TV a lot. And you said you even heard of him, right?
Oh, yes, yeah. Once you said the name, yeah, absolutely. I remember that that he beat Bobby Flay.
Yes, and he was so much fun that watching him. I said, "Oh, I love this guy. I want to see him again." And here I am. I'm going to be able to meet him on Friday night on August 26th.
April. It's actually the Friday after Easter.
Yes, that's correct.
Easy to remember. So. He's not only going to be the keynote speaker, he's going to direct the kitchen staff?
Paul Starkey, who is a past president, right. He says, is he going to do a cooking demonstration? And I don't think so. But I think he's just out there to talk with us and for us to meet with him. But we are looking forward to it, and I think it'll be a great draw. I think a lot of people do know the name and will be drawn to it and will help us, because the funds that we raise at this dinner will provide resources for our conferences, will help us continue what I call the mattress program, and to just allow people to in their conferences to continue with the programs that they've created. And, just over this last week, there have been several conferences out there, not only feeding the poor, but bringing a lot of... This has been a particularly... Maybe it's me, maybe my blood is thinning, but it's been a particularly cold winter. And with the wet weather, it's even worse. And our conferences are out there handing out, especially in Sacramento, there's Holy Spirit and... Our Lady of Grace in West Sac, they hand out winter coats. Mm-hmm. They call it their winter warming program.
Right.
Sleeping bags, ponchos, and sometimes they need funds to continue doing things like that because they don't get enough in donations. And this fundraiser will allow those programs to continue.
Very, very good. Well, Judy, always a pleasure to talk with you, and I'm sure our paths are going to cross frequently between now and April the 26th.
Well, I hope to see you April 26th.
Absolutely.
Finally, people may not know, we've talked on the radio several times, but we've never met in person, so I'm looking forward to it, Bob, and I always appreciate talking with you on the radio.
The same goes for me, and we'll look forward to it.
Thank you.
Thanks. God bless, Judy.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Greatly appreciate it. That's Judy Dietline, the president of the Sacramento Diocesan Council of St. Vincent de Paul. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless.
river of questions. Can I pour my heart out to a listening ear? Well, I see this life, it's valleys and mountains, and I think of all the roads that brought me here. Oh, that brought me here. Walking down the road. Well, I've questioned my reasons, this life I'm living. I questioned my ability to judge wrong from right. Well, I questioned all the things I've ever called certain. My race, my religion, my country, my mind. But the one thing